I got a call from my daughter yesterday as she drove out to camp. She's starting in camp this morning, and she has to go by her sign. And she said, "Your sign said, that ain't traditional. Did you mean to put that up there?" And I said, "Yeah, I did, actually. It actually says now in front of that comma, that ain't traditional." But she said, "Wow, you got me for the first time. I like that. I'd come, except I've got to go and get started at camp." I don't know why, but I think it's the ain't in there that she liked. The idea is that many of you woke up this morning or yesterday or whatever with certain hope in your heart, certain seeking or a need to be out or be connected. I know that some of you shopped the title and that helped you do it, but a lot of it is about wanting to be in a congregation, wanting to be in a sanctuary, wanting to be a part of this community, something larger on a particular day. And you come hoping to hear something that connects with whatever is up for you. We're going to do it a little differently. We're saying, what is the reflection that you are seeking today? If you sat and thought about it, what's on your heart and mind? What needs to be spoken to? If you think about how you've always come to church or to synagogue or to places, doing it this way, asking you for what you want, that ain't traditional. How many times have you been asked that? Or is it? Here it is, or should be, in the sense that we say it's about your experience interacting in community, your insights with the larger picture of Unitarian Universalist orientation, understanding, tradition that says, yes, life is like this. But it's about how you experience it. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that revelation is unsealed, meaning it's not just in a book, it's found through our lives and our lived experience and practice. It exists in the integrity and wholeness of each of you. There's the phrase, the prophethood of all believers. Sort of, we all have something going on in us that speaks. So take a moment, there's a piece of paper in your order of service, and see if you sit there with it, what reflection you are moved to hear. It's just like in Joys and Concerns, you don't need to write one down if you're not moved. But we're going to collect them at the end and see how many we can speak to, or also put in reserve and speak to another time. So take a moment and just, while Catherine plays music for us, breathe in, breathe out, see what, in the Quaker sense, comes to your mind, your heart, and then into your pencil. This is how many we got last time total, and there are two bowls full coming up here, so I should probably have somebody, I'll just randomly grab them. Somebody sort, want to sort through it? Yeah, if you'll sort through some of them, see if there's some that come up. You want to do it? Well, you go ahead. Yeah, sort them, see what you do. And we'll get out by 11:30. So while she's sorting that, what I want to do is start with the survey. I didn't realize what it was going to look like, but the survey that the youth did, what does it tell us? One of the things it says is, what age did you first question your religious background? And all of these columns are before the age, that's all right, you don't have to see the detail. All of these are before the age of 26. So from here back is, actually six people from 0 to 9 said that, and 16 to 18. So what you're seeing is this is age 26 back. Now, where do we address most of our religious questions and thinking? What audience? It's this age up. So what is it telling about where we should put our energies and our focus and our time? So that's just one thing. The differences in identified beliefs, it has to do with how they ask the questions too, but what categories best fit your beliefs? And what it shows is Unitarian Universalist, humanism, God is nature, agnosticism, mysticism, atheism, paganism, and then these two are forms of Christianity, ethical Christianity and Christian. So it kind of comes down like this. But a part of it is the way they answered the question, asked the questions. But if you look at that, what strikes you? It should be the diversity of people in the room. And if you ask the question, well, first, it's things like they said, where they said Unitarian Universalist principles. It was just, do those fit your beliefs? Well, whatever tradition you're in, yeah, they do. So, I mean, you could check those. They also didn't make it clear, they were telling me, that you could check as many as you wanted to. So you could do that mix. And that would even tell you more in a way that there's so many differences. There's such a diversity of beliefs in this room. And what are those beliefs about? What is that religious identity about? It's about ways to order the big picture, the context for our lives. It's sort of that big container within which we move. And we sort of don't ask questions of it. We use it to guide us, inform us. Well, one of the things you can say about this congregation, you can say, I'm here because there's freedom for me to be any of these. Now, that's true, but freedom is not a context. It's simply a release. It's simply opportunity to move in ways that you haven't moved before. And if it's whatever you've been in has felt constricting, then freedom is relief, really. But then what happens when you say, what is the larger context that's informing me here? What is my organizing understanding that helps guide my life? How do you state that? Well, I've been trying to do that, you know, with Unitarian Universalist principles, but I would say also basic beliefs. What do the traditions tell us about how life works? And I've tried to use the word, change the understanding of religion from a box set of beliefs or the necessary sense of identity to an orientation. Meaning this is how there are some basic ways that all of us with all these differences orient to the bigger picture, the larger context. Now, I realize that that doesn't give you that strong sense of identity in the way you've come to know it before, which is this, again, boxed set of beliefs that creates my identity. I'm Catholic. I'm Baptist. I'm Christian. I'm Jewish. I'm this or that. And to have the understanding that that can be your path, but the orientation that you share may not just fit with that congregation, it's hard for people to take on and to give up that sense of identity. But Unitarian Universalism identifies a particular orientation to life and love and religion. And I want you to help me, maybe not this morning, because we got so many other things right now, but to understand why this notion of orientation doesn't work for you. It works powerfully for me and has become very clear. It's sort of the idea that I can be religious, meaning I can move in the world, I can have this sense of how I'm supposed to be without feeling boxed in, without asking that question all the time. I don't believe in that. I don't do that. That doesn't work for me. How can I be in there and they say this and I don't connect with that? You know what I mean? You know that feeling? I also don't want to have it be that I'm this and you're that, so we can't talk. For example, I don't get it. I don't want to move that way. I don't want to define that way. And then notice the idea of having an orientation like a compass, which tells me I live in an inclusive universe. If you're going to talk about God, it's a loving God. There is no hell. You know, those are orientating understandings that you move in the world differently to know that. If you're asking the question, what does it mean to live well? You don't just immediately look to, I've got to have the right job, the right money, the right this and that. You know those are necessary for survival and filling out a picture. But you know that there are religious exemplars who say they're inspired ways of living in relationship to an inclusive God, or inclusive universe. There are ways to do that. And if you do that, you will experience life as good in a deep sense. And then the third piece is you can't just sit and try to soak it up or come get it. You have to put it into practice. You have to live out your life in these ways in order to feel the benefits of it. That makes sense? Seems to me that's an orientation. And so, and Unitarian and Universalist traditions through the years have come along saying, you can orient like that and it'll be a good life. And you can make changes in the world. So then, in that bigger picture, if you're a mystic, that's cool. If you're an atheist, that's cool. Now, in that atheism, odds are you're an inclusive atheist, or you wouldn't be here. So you ask those questions about how it is. When you see that only 12 people are either ethically Christian or identify as Christian, then you can ask the others, how many of you are culturally Christian? You know, it's just in my bones. And be good about that. All right, so you get the picture? You can kind of just begin to work with that orientation and not worry so much about those box set of beliefs. There's a poem that says it to me and that I just want to share with you. It's called Lost. And it is metaphorical about that sense of knowing where you are at all times. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back here again, saying here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or a bush does is lost on you, then surely you are lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. Let it find you. That's what I mean by orientation. And I think you heard that probably as a nature poem, or as an ecology poem or something. But it says, the world around you is not lost. Wherever you are is called here. You must interact with it, be relational. Everything says, I've made this place around you. You're a part of this. If you leave it, if you feel disconnected, not grounded, you may come back again saying here. Stand still. Breathe, we say. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Just take the phrase, stand still, and then examine our modern lives. Stand still. Let it find you. So that's what I think about when I think about orientation. And I would like you to help me, because I think it's very powerful to think that way. Let me know if it isn't, you know? It doesn't work. So, because I find that everybody wants to be this oppositional, identity-focused understanding of religion. That's no fun, you know? That's just not what it's about. Did you organize anything here? Just hand me some. Good Lord. Give me some cool ones. Wow. Wow. I'm good. I'm good. We're perfect. So Judy has divided these into categories. And loosely. Well, that's good. Categories, loose categories. I'm not gonna have time to sort them all out. But one is about healing. One is about social justice. One category is about the earth and what's going on, and then the others about Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Hendersonville. What are we doing? So which one would you like me to delve into right at this moment? Healing? What do you think? You think healing? I think that's more personal. Let's see what that is. Oh, can't deal with that. Oops, can't help you with that. Sorry that that's going on. Okay. Okay, these here are personal. That's what you come with. Need guidance with an old dilemma that's come back to me, and I'm having much trouble ending and resolving. At the moment, I'm carrying great sorrow, and I hope to reach inner peace, balance, and a renewed sense of purpose and self. Dealing with disappointment. Emotional troubles, depression, and sadness is all easily camouflaged with a bright smile. We all have darkness hidden in us. Perhaps we can address those in need of some help. Life is a bundle of surprises. The one that I find for myself is the surprise of getting old and dealing with death in the near future. I can help you with that one just by empathizing. No, all of these, the same deal. The safety of those I love and their well-being. Wow. Concern for a middle son and their struggles in healing. What do you hear in those statements? There are a dozen of them, but it's what's going on in each of us. There's nobody in this room that doesn't have something like this, some version of these questions going on. And what I said earlier, for example, I can't do anything about getting older. I can't do anything about depression and sadness. I can't do anything about disappointment. But if somebody wrote down dealing with disappointment, I can talk to you about how there is light beyond. There is a power in grief that the body knows how to handle these things given half a chance. But we've come to expect life to be without them. If they're occurring, we think, I've got to get rid of this and get back to happiness, right? So a lot of times it's the struggle and the fear that I will never return, that joy will never come back, that I'll never feel that sense of belonging again. My theology says that even within the darkness. There's healing to be found even when there is no cure. By that I mean that joy is not dependent on everything being fixed, okay? That it can peek through if you're not discounting it for what it isn't doing. I know that's not helpful. It doesn't remove the disappointments. It doesn't make it all, it does make it where it's not all or nothing each time. Each of these, I would say, if you'd like to make an appointment with me, please do. There is so much sadness and anger in the world today. That one. I would say, yes, and it's also held up because it is what sells. That if you turn off or limit your time with the TV, with the computer, with that large awareness of what's being sent to you, it will reduce your sense of drama within a week's time, because you will be looking around in your community and dealing with the sadness and anger of your neighbors. But you're also experiencing it from around you because everybody who's watching the TV is practicing this stuff, this oppositional, angry righteousness all the time. So how do you deal with it? I think it's individually. Wow. What can we do that can help promote a more peaceful community? I just said it, country and planet. And why is it so hard for us to do this? Because we have to do it individually. And it's really hard to have that sense of not fighting back, of not arguing, of creating the space for us to be in conversation rather than being in opposition to each other and what we're thinking, arguing about it. So, anything else there, Judy? Categories? This didn't work because we were so overwhelmed. But now we know. I got the outline of a sabbatical. I think I'll take it right now. Seeking my true self without self-judgment. There it is. Parker Palmer talks about a hidden wholeness. It's called the integrity that comes from being who we are. So, seeking my true self without self-judgment. You can't do it without self-judgment. Maybe you can, I can't. But what you can do is keep coming back to your own wholeness. That's when we were talking about a faith-filled life. It was so important, but so hard to get across, because all it means is a life with meaning. I trust everyone in this room to lead a faith-filled life. You're all doing it. You're all trying to do it. But it's so hard to get across. That's your true self without self-judgment. That's what you're trying to find, is what has meaning for you. No fear in facing who I really am. Go for it. Forgiveness. Oh, these are great. Frustration over what I cannot control. It's like getting all of these right. It's right. Over what I cannot control. There it is. Your sphere of influence does not overlap your sphere of concern. So you can't control it. Don't be frustrated. Oh my gosh. Acceptance of all, regardless of religious, political diversities. Oh my gosh. I just go with the flow as long as it's not taking me over the falls. These are awesome. We will go through and list all of these because it's so wonderful. Acceptance of all. Regardless of religious, political diversities. Hear that. It must start within the walls of our fellowship. It must start here first. In order to create peace in the world and counter the sadness and anger of that you see around you, it has to start here. And it has to start with those understandings. Okay. How to wrap this up right now so that you can go to the annual meeting. We were having a conversation in Spirituality on Tap, and it was about how we don't do just that. People were upset that there isn't total acceptance of different religions, of particularly different political beliefs. There were statements made that were exclusive of others. Somebody said, "You didn't vote for President Obama? You're racist." Out loud. Well, that's really fallacious thinking, because he's Muslim. But but here, I've been trying to say it, your orientation doesn't tell you what your political identity or choice is for what reasons. And what we came to say was, we can't say it'll be perfect here, no. But we can say, let's hold the conversation where we get to know each other and open up that question to try to figure out what inclusion really means and how we walk together. Name me another place that would do that and would move into that spirituality of discomfort in order to try to find the connection. It's not about answers, but it is about relational ways of being together. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, "I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, 'Here.' No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you."